Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So Tulane University has implemented a new school policy saying that students are required to live on campus for their first 3 years, their freshman, sophomore, junior year. They can move off campus in their senior year. This is a trend that has been going on for a while in universities across the country. Tulane has spent more than $200 million over the past 5 years building new dorms and replacing old ones, and now they can house as many as 5,000 students, or roughly about 60% of the undergraduate student body. One of the downstream implications of this is that a lot of rental property around Tulane and extending out throughout the uptown area is now available, flooding the market. And here to talk to us about the downstream implications of same, Arthur Sturbkow, local real estate analyst. Arthur, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Newell. Glad to be here.
So, Arthur, what does this mean? I mean, these universities, obviously, housing is a great investment, a great return on their investment. In fact, maybe one of the best returns on investment that they have at a university in today's climate.
Yeah, it's a dramatic change over the last, I'd say, 10 years from what Tulane used to provide for housing versus today. The big aspect right now, of course, is safety. And that is a real, real issue with the national media kind of painting New Orleans with a lot of crime. So parents are very concerned, obviously, when they hear about these horror stories. The good news is that Tulane campus police has been exceptional in terms of reducing those types of incidents on campus. And I think a large part of that also has to do with just trying to make that a much safer environment for parents who are looking at Tulane as an educational choice. You know, Bill, I don't think many people realize how expensive it is to go to Tulane for a four-year degree. You're talking about over $400,000 over a four-year period. That's a big investment, and they want to make sure their kids are safe and they're going to get a return if you're a parent or just a student.
Yeah. But and I get it. I mean, I get exactly why they're going down this path for the host of reasons. Part of the problem, though, is, you know, what happens now? And obviously we have this glut of rental property uptown. So what do you see occurring?
I think it's going to be absorbed. It may take a little while. The rents will certainly come down a bit, unfortunately, because that's going to restrict the landlord's ability to make some repairs and maintenance. But I think it's going to provide for some affordable housing in some areas that heretofore were too expensive for some folks. So I think some folks who own some rental properties may look to maybe some subsidized housing for folks with housing vouchers in the area. They do a lot of screening of those tenants, so it's not the big worry that it used to be in years past. But it'll get absorbed, but it's probably going to take about a year for that to really fully measure itself out. The other aspect of it, of course, is, and this is kind of wasn't really talked about, but the neighborhood restaurants. One of the other changes that Tulane did was require meal plans for all students on campus. And you go, hasn't that always been the case? No, not really. You had the option. Well, with those requirements, that's going to require those kids to stay on campus more, which, of course, what is that going to do to local restaurants and that aspect? They also did away with having car permits for the students. So no longer can students purchase a parking pass if they're a freshman, sophomore, or junior. So there have been a lot of changes in Tulane to make it more of a self-contained community, which, of course, is great for the landlords. And, of course, the security in these dorms is exceptional. So if you're a Tulane student, I think it's very worthwhile. If you're own property in the area, I think you're going to have a couple of hiccups for probably 4 to 6 months.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting as to how that plays out. I mean, there is going to be a tax implication, though, right? I mean, as rents go down, you're going to see more and more appeals as it relates to the assessed value of this property, and it could have a negative impact on city revenues.
Without a doubt. You've got some folks who uptown who have a single-family home, and it may be a 4 or 5 bedroom home, and they're renting out 4 or 5 of the bedrooms. And so, you know, they got rental income on that. Well, they got the homestead exemption. That's great. But it was kind of investment property too. So it's kind right. of in the weeds. It's a little sticky sometimes, Newell, but you're correct. Certainly the value of these properties are going to be market driven. And I think the assessor is probably going to take that into account in those neighborhoods. I feel pretty comfortable he will.
You also have a lot of these properties that have over the years been designed to accommodate the most students that they can. It's going to require a lot of investment on the part of some of these landlords to kind of modify this back to a traditional rental unit, one that would align with the market.
Or back to a single family unit or back to a true duplex the way that they used to be in the old days, if you want to say that. But you're right. That's a capital investment and there has to be some type of return. Again, the market's going to dictate whether it's worthwhile to make those changes or not, or just change the structure. You know, some of those properties may be eligible for VRBO or things like that in those areas if they qualify. And again, some other properties may be good alternatives for some subsidized housing. There's about 20,000 people looking for housing in New Orleans right now that have vouchers but no property to move into. So there's inventory that could become available for some of these folks.
Do you think that this kind of revitalizes this talking point or friction point with the not-for-profit community and landowners? Because, you know, Tulane has the benefit of not paying property taxes. And, you know, you're outside of the educational realm. You're now providing all of this housing. And basically, you're in the housing business now, but you have the benefit of not paying any property tax at all for that housing.
Well, you got to remember the neighborhood restaurants are paying property taxes, and Tulane's cafeterias are not. So you are correct. It certainly is disproportionate, and you could make the claim that Tulane provides a lot of other benefits to the area to help offset that. But frankly, that's a higher pay grade than I'm able to quantify.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, this has kind of been a sticking point in this city, right? I mean, we have a lot of, and look, it's not a criticism of the not-for-profit community. They do a lot of great work, and we are the beneficiary of all of that. But by the same token, that they have an advantage, and when they start competing against other investors, you know, in our community who have to pay these taxes, which are not cheap in this city, it's kind of an unfair advantage.
Newell, you're correct. The city has a bad history of some nonprofits buying houses and then they turn up blighted. And of course, they're off the tax rolls now. and or the money that has been collected by the nonprofits, very little of it really gets returned back to the public in terms of benefits. It goes to staff and expenses and travel and things like that. So clearly some of the nonprofits shouldn't exist in today's marketplace and shouldn't be allowed to distort market forces. I'm a big free market advocate, as you can probably suspect. Right. But some of them have certainly abused the system.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how you have a very rosy outlook as it relates to this property uptown. I happen to know, you know, people that own 30, 40, 50, 60 units. They predominantly, you know, rented to Tulane and Loyola students and Xavier students as well. I don't 6 months to a year. I just think the tail on this may be longer than that.
Well, I think that you're going to find a lot of people are probably in a situation where they're going to have to make some changes. Some of these properties are going to come back into commerce, clearly, and they're going to be sold. And some of these properties are going to be, used for other facilities, and rents are going to adjust. There aren't too many landlords who can afford to have a vacant unit for 6 months. That's a pretty stressful situation. They're going to have to make some changes, whether it's selling it, whether it's reducing the rents or doing some other changes, adding getting some loans to renovate the properties. Every property is going to be unique, but you're not wrong. But I do think it'll probably a 4 to 6 month period. I think some of those landlords have known about this for months, so this isn't some that just happened this week. They've had some time to prepare. I don't think many were prepared to see as many for lease signs showing up literally in the 30-day period as they see, but they'll start getting absorbed by people. People need housing in New Orleans. They need it. We badly need it.
But when we look at the market overall as it relates to rental property, you know, I live in Old Metairie, and we have a lot of duplexes, scattered throughout the neighborhoods here, triplexes, fourplexes. I see a lot of rental signs up, more, and I've been here since in this area since 95, and I've never seen this many for rent signs as I drive around my neighborhood ever.
Well, and you're correct. And of course, we've had a proliferation of apartment complexes being built in the region, and that has certainly absorbed a lot of renters into those units and out of the typical single family rental or duplex rental or three triplex or fourplex. So those apartment complexes, whether it's security or extra amenities in those apartment complexes, the tenants are willing to pay a little premium for those newer type housing units. That's a big impact. So you can't add thousands of apartment units in apartment complexes and not expect it to unbalance the single family or small multifamily units.
Yeah, because you're really renting more of a lifestyle, right, than just
correct.
A place to live.
It's a quality of life issue. You're 100% correct. And I think that's what Tulane is trying to do, is provide a different quality of life for the students and justify, you know, that's pretty heavy tuition costs at Tulane.
Yeah, I mean, you know, from the Tulane perspective, and I didn't want it to seem like criticism of them, if I was sitting there as a chancellor, I'd probably do the same thing, because the more things that I can control as it relates to my brand, I want to control it.
Well, especially when you're subsidized by taxpayers, that does unbalance the market quite a bit, as you said initially. So yes, you're correct. If you're on the board and that's your job to make Tulane as profitable as possible, or get as many donations as possible, that's fine. But John Q. Consumer next door, who's got a little single family home he's trying to rent, That's an unbalancing act.
So both things can be true in the end on this topic. It's good for the city, it's good for Tulane, and it's not so good for others. Not unlike every other thing, there are winners and there are losers.
That's correct. And I'm concerned not just the landlords, but I'm concerned of the little small commercial businesses that used to rely on those two-lane students who could drive around to their stores or to their shops, restaurants, coffee shops, or whatever. And now they're going to be not locked down at Tulane, but there's certainly an extreme benefit to them to staying on campus rather than venturing out to neighboring stores.
Well, Arthur, I'll add a little tidbit to that. My daughter, who went away to college in kind of the same policy that they have at Tulane ahead at her college, we were on a meal plan, right? She never ate in the cafeteria. She hated the food in the cafeteria. So mom and dad are paying the freight twice. She never, not once, in multiple semesters ever visited the cafeteria. Now, when I went up and visited, I'd make her go to the cafeteria, and I was like, this food is not that bad. Why are you not eating here? You know, why is my Uber bill so damn high, you know, where you're at? So there's hope for the little commercial establishments yet.
I hope you're right. I have a feeling when I saw that what Tulane had done to their cafeteria and their food source, it is an incredible food court that they now have. The options are incredible at Tulane. So I don't think it's the typical cafeteria style food from Cisco or whatever.
Neither was this up there either. But you know, still, we found a way. We figured out a way not to go to the cafeteria. So.
Well, maybe anyway. Now with all the boys being required to eat all they could eat at the buffet, maybe the girls will follow it too.
That's true too. That is true too. As always, I totally enjoy the conversation. Arthur Sturbkow, local real estate analyst. Thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime, Dewell. Take care.
All righty, folks. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with it.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Folks, you've heard me talk about this on this show quite a bit lately, and since the assassination of Charlie Kirk, the amount of misinformation about what he says and the context in which he said it has just been absolutely incredible. How they folks have misquoted him over and over and over again, and I caution folks that it's easily done, but I think it's really been intentional. But just to give everyone the benefit of the doubt, when things are said in a debate construct, because you're responding to something that somebody else said, and then if you take that snippet and you don't put it in its full context, it can be very, very misleading. Our next guest, Curtis Hill, Project 21 ambassador, also served as Indiana's attorney general. Wrote a piece the other day discussing Charlie's legacy and why, as a black man, he shares Charlie's much-quoted concerns about some of the issues that he's presented, but more specifically, DEI. Curtis, welcome to the show.
Newell, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I don't know how you would describe the environment today. I mean, I watch folks taking these positions that Charlie had taken over the years, just so out of context, it's just mind-numbing.
Well, you know, Newell, what happens is people believe what they want to believe, and the left is convinced that they're losing this battle, and so they take a stand-up guy like Charlie Kirk, who speaks the truth, and they demonize him, and they take statements that he makes in his effort to demonstrate truth and to take it out of context, as you indicated. And the whole point is to turn them into a racist. If you can't beat them on the debate, if you can't defund them, make them a racist and shut them up. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people who take the bait and stay on the sidelines. They have things they want to express, but because they may come off as not politically correct, a lot of people stay on the sidelines and keep their mouths shut. Not Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk went right into the breach with a direct communication, talking about how DEI was detrimental to blacks. The very people that are supposed to be uplifted, it's actually hurting them. And the quote that I see all the time is, he said, I see a black pilot in the cockpit, and I'm wondering if he's qualified. And they turn that into, oh, Charlie Kirk is against black pilots. No, he's for black pilots. He wants to make sure that they were chosen for their excellence as opposed to the race.
Yeah, it's amazing. You, as a black member of society, I've heard Jasmine Crockett and AOC and a whole host of folks saying that, and taking that quote, for example, and saying it was dehumanizing and it was meant to be a bad thing and racist. And I mean, there's just so many ways that they describe it. Did you ever feel that?
Never. Not only is it not dehumanizing, it's actually creating a standard that we want to have. I believe in diversity. I don't believe in diversity at the risk of excellence. I think inclusion is fine, but not at the risk of competence. We have to put a perspective on this thing. And what happens is you put people in positions and it forces folks to look at them askance and say, well, what was the reason they picked this person? I'll give you an example, Newell. A few years back when Joe Biden was vice president running for president or former vice president running for president, and he was going to choose his running mate, they said, who do you want? He says, I want a black woman. Well, right there, he marginalized the effectiveness of whatever black woman he chose because he prioritized her race and sex over her competence. Now, what he could have done, what he should have done, was simply chose the person that he wanted, and that person would have happened to have been black or happened to have been a woman, and they wouldn't have been marginalized or made a meaningless appointment. There's ways to promote the effort and desire to have a diverse society without preferencing or prioritizing race, sexuality, and actually end up marginalizing the folks that we're trying to help.
Well, obviously he did it trying to coalesce a political group with the belief that blacks only vote for blacks, whites only vote for whites, Hispanic only vote for Hispanics, but we know that not to be true, right?
Well, it's not true. The thing is, it historically had been true at one point, but things have changed. I mean, there's a real revelation going on within the black community that, you know, for 60 years, we've been peddled and fed the same information, and black America has not progressed. And yet, all sorts of other groups, including sexual transgenders, have been able to hitch their wagon on the black civil rights agenda, and they've been able to score over and over and over again, while the black community continues to come up short. So it's high time that the black community looks up and says, we're not looking at Democrats, we're not looking at Republicans, we're looking independently at what's in the best interest of our progressing in America. And what do black Americans want? They want the same thing as white Americans want. They want freedom, they want good schools, they want good neighborhoods, they want good jobs. That's what equal justice is all about.
No doubt. One of the other comments that seems to be going across this country like wildfire was a statement made by Charlie relative to black women, saying that black women do not have the brain processing power to be taken seriously. And, you know, obviously that taken in absence of context, it sounds absolutely horrible, right? But it was in response to this whole thing about affirmative action, and he singled out Michelle Obama, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, Joy Reid, and late Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. And it was when they came out and said that the only reason they are what they are in life was because of affirmative action. And I think he was trying to make the point, as you just said earlier, that that's not a connotation that is very positive, right?
Well, no, it's not. It's marginalizing. It's taking someone who otherwise could be very, very competent and reducing them to the sum of their race and the sum of their gender. That's exactly what we don't want to do. We want young children, young black kids in particular, to look at what it takes to get ahead, not as, well, I'm just going to line up in here because they need four more blacks and I'm black. No, we want them to feel that they have to prepare, to learn, to drive themselves to be successful the proper way, through earnest and hard work.
Yeah, I mean, I loved when his response to a lot of folks used to be, why is the NFL got this percentage of blacks and the NBA has this percentage of blacks and they get this deer in the headlights look? And he goes, it's okay, you can go ahead, you can say it, because they're the best. they're exceptional. That's why they're on the team, not because they're black.
And that's what the American standard should be. It should be about choosing the best person. It's not about having a desire to do something else. The biggest problem that I saw with DEI, with companies and universities, is it was a game. It was not a true measure of actually trying to be successful in creating diversity. It was being able to say, we have a program. Look at us. We've got a program. But if you look at whatever their success rates, and I'm not sure how you measure diversity success rates other than through quotas, but they're not able to demonstrate any success whatsoever other than they're making preferential choices based on race. And if you're talking about the aviation industry and you're choosing someone to be a pilot in the airplane on the basis of race as opposed to the basis of flying the plane, from my standpoint, Newell, I want to know that guy can land a plane. I don't care what he wears. He can wear a dress. He can wear makeup. I don't care. I just want to make sure that that's the best pilot that's in the sky when I'm flying.
What do you say when, you know, folks, and I have a bunch of folks that are texting in saying that, you know, DEI and affirmative action only opened the door. They still, once they were in, they still had to produce and they still had to make the grade. But that there's a price to pay there, right?
Well, the preferential treatment has got to stop. You know, we've had protected classes in the last 60 years set aside. We're going to set aside so many spots for this particular person or that particular person, and it hasn't worked. And the problem with protecting some classes is that you're not protecting others. And the bottom line is that's not equal opportunity. As we see it from the 14th Amendment, the idea that everyone has an equal shot. We have to go back to a society that gets everybody an equal shot, puts them all at the starting line, and then from there it's a matter of individual merit. Some people are going to be stronger. Some people are going to be better. Some people are going to be smarter. And, yes, we do have to acknowledge that there have been problems in this country that have created generations of detriment and disadvantage in the black community and other communities as well. Making preferential treatment has not proven to be the answer and has been detrimental to the success of blacks and other minorities as well.
I mean, at some point, I don't know where this all squares itself up, but when you look at political leadership, for example, in some areas of the country, you've had black leadership for generations now, at least two, you know, in some cities.
Well, in most of your major cities, you've had black mayors. You've had policies that were designed to be so-called to the advantage of black individuals, and it hasn't done anything to decrease the wage gaps, the income gaps, the education gaps. They still exist. There's something else going on. It doesn't mean that we don't have a problem with trying to bring all of our folks together to create opportunity, but affirmative action, DEI, has not been the answer.
Yeah. Do you think when does the rhetoric here change? You know, I mean, it just seems that we are at a flashpoint. Charlie's assassination obviously has brought to the forefront a lot of discussion here. I don't find that it's getting any friendlier.
Well, it's very divided. As I say, a lot of the discussion centers around who you like. If you were a Charlie Kirk fan, you look at his comments in one way. If you didn't like Charlie Kirk, you looked at him another way. We've seen this in the context of hate speech in the last few weeks, which is awful from my perspective. I think it changes as we look at Charlie's life and the engagement of others, what they're doing to get young people to think critically, what they're doing in various communities to make people aware that maybe I should consider what's happened in the last 40, 50, 60 years and what could happen going forward. I think as we see in the last 2 weeks, we're seeing a lot of young people thinking about church for the first time and giving the biblical experience an opportunity. That's a much needed direction in this country. So hopefully we'll see more and more leadership that's getting youngsters and even oldsters to think critically, to listen to the truth, to not fall for the far left socialism policies that sound good, but they don't really work. That's one of the guys I admire the most, Thomas Sowell, used to be a socialist when he was a young man, and someone asked him, well, you were a socialist, why did you stop? And he said, because it didn't work. There wasn't anything fancy. It just didn't work. And that's what we have to do, is we have to be in a position to do what Charlie did, which was take on the issue, be bold about it, come armed with information, come armed with statistics, and be willing to count the cost of your conviction. Count the cost of, I speak the truth. I may lose money, but I'm speaking the truth. I may lose my freedom, but I'm speaking the truth. I may lose my life, but I'm speaking the truth.
I'm glad you brought up critical thinking. I did a monologue on it the other day. And the one thing that was interesting to me, and I started following Charlie's career several years ago, looking at the YouTube videos of when he'd go on campuses, and it revealed an astonishing phenomenon. As he talked to these students, there was, like, in my view, very little critical thinking skills there. I mean, it was like they had been fed a dose of something somewhere, somehow. They bought in it, you know, hook, line, and sinker, and didn't know a single fact about any of it to support their proposition, their position. It was amazing to me.
Well, and that's one of the benefits of Charlie and others that have gone out to college campuses to challenge these youngsters, because, Newell, you wouldn't know about that if there weren't Charlie Kirk's out there taking these messages onto the campuses, because it's so bizarre. When you see the ignorance that's displayed by some of these kids, you want to scream. We wouldn't know about it if we didn't have this challenge. It's much like what happened through the pandemic. The positive through the pandemic was parents got to learn firsthand what their kids weren't learning in grade school and high school. Before that, you'd send your kids to school and you thought they were in good hands. Then suddenly the kids are at home and they're getting these lessons online, and parents are walking by the computer and saying, what's that crap? That's not what I bargained for. So much of this is about being enlightened so that we start to move in the right direction.
Curtis Hill, thank you so much for joining us. Project 21 ambassador. He's the former Indiana Attorney General. And I really appreciated your piece and that you posted, but also your willingness to step up and provide a black perspective on this issue that I don't think many people think is actually really out there. And I'm glad that you're standing up to do so. Very brave.
Well, I appreciate that, and I think the black perspective is the American perspective, and it's just a matter of time before we see the black community taking a rise up and helping lead us back to the freedom that this nation was founded on.
No doubt. We are more alike than there are things that separate us. I mean, I was the former sheriff here, and I used to tell people all the time, we all want the same things, as cliche as it sounds, a safe place to live, work, and raise our family. It's not that hard. I mean, you know, when you think about it. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great week.
Well, thank you, Neil. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk In text line. Stay with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Fee and fees apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. Let's go to the talk lines. We have Herman. Herman, you're up. What say you?
Hey, Norm. Hey, Norm. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Herman.
Questions real quick, okay? Mm-hmm. Why is it that every time we hear about diversity, equality, and inclusion, it has to refer to African-American or black people?
Because that's what the mainstream media focuses on.
Exactly.
I mean,
because I
you're
think
right.
a lot of white females
you're right.
have
not,
benefited from
it's not limited. It's not limited to blacks. You're right.
Exactly, because the DEI laws are written so that companies would hire the most qualified male, female, white, black, Asian, person of minority status, or handicapped person. It wasn't written just for African-American or black people.
And but The problem, Herman, is that major corporations, mainstream media, what they focus on and what they put out there as part of their propaganda in trying to get people to believe that they're these all-encompassing business entities and the like, they focus on blacks.
Yeah, absolutely correct. I agree with you 100%, because in my situation, I was actually hired for a job a second time, because the first time I wasn't hired, came back, interviewed 3 years later, got the job. My boss had to literally tell the guys in the company, I did not hire this guy because he was black. Because mm-hmm. they thought he hired me because I was black. Mm-hmm. And he had to literally tell the guys that.
So well, you've just embraced what Charlie Kirk has been saying for years. That it's actually worked in a counterproductive way to blacks and other minorities.
Yeah, so I just want to make that point, because it's society that looks at DEI and interpret it in a different context than it should be.
Yeah, it's the political context, right?
Exactly. I mean, all right, thanks for taking my call.
Herman, thank you for calling. Have a great week. We'll be right back. Check in with Scoot when we return. Stay with us. Well, it's Hump Day, and now for the master of Hump Day, Scoot joins us. Let's see where that takes us, Scoot.
I can't hear anything. Okay, now I can hear everything. Wait a minute, this Hump Day, why am I the expert on Hump Day? You know, I remember when I first got in radio, you know, it was like so naughty to go on the air and say, oh, today is Hump Day. Yeah, we're on FM and we can say things like Hump Day and everybody gets this image of, well, anyway, you know. Hey, Jimmy Kimmel came back last night. We'll talk a little bit about that. Also, we'll talk about Starbucks declining sales in an effort to change things. They've got a new dress code. I don't know whether you've noticed, but we'll talk about this. And have you ever had a dress code at work? And do you think that there should be more dress codes out there? We'll talk about clothes and work and all of that coming up.
Stay tuned, folks. Scoot's got a great lineup for you. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great hump day, and we'll see you again in the morning.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Fee and fees apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.